daughter. Winifred, age 97, and Robert, age 57, Carter, are being interviewed by Renee Garalick for Concord's Oral History Program, sponsored by the Concord Historical Commission. The interview is taking place at their home at 183 Haywood Mill Road on February 6, 1980. The sights and sounds of your youth are familiar recollections to you growing up in West Concord.
That's right. I remember specifically the volume of train traffic traveling through Concord, West Concord, and the points at the center of town where the freight trains would make their switching processes, dropping off freight cars. The event would probably last 15 minutes to a couple of hours, depending on how many freight cars that were dropped off and picked up. We had the advantage of two railroads converging at this point, and the shifting process was always a very attractive event, especially for young boys. Nearby there was a coal yard.
Don't make it too long.
And the fun of running up and down the piles of coal, causing them to shift, seemed to be an attraction to very young kids who would come home covered with coal dust. Another thing was the tarring of the roads, when a Tavia truck would travel up and down the streets, depositing a stream of ribbon of tar, and followed by sand trucks from which men threw the sand out with the shovels onto the newly tarred road. We would often get in the way and get home covered with tar, which our parents would have to remove with lard or kerosene and this sort of thing. I remember the ice trucks traveling, delivering cakes of ice to everyone who had an ice box. We would hitch on the back tail of the ice truck for a free ride to the next stop in the hope that the ice man would chip off a free piece of ice for us to suck on for the day, for the time being. I guess that's probably what I remember besides the barges, the Osborne barges. Before I went to school, they were in vogue, and they traveled to Westvale. A man named Jimmy Russell operated the one that traveled a route to Westvale. In the winter, it was a sleigh barge, and in the summertime, it was a real factory type barge.
Concord Junction had a separate distinct entity at that time.
That's right. Our really first contact with students in Concord was when we entered freshman year at high school, and we began to travel by bus from West Concord to Concord Center. And for the first time, that was probably the first opportunity to meet children our own age who had gone to Peter Bulkey School.
You went to the West Concord School?
Yes, in the Harvey Wheeler. We had two buildings at that time. Some grades were in one, so we were sort of alternating back and forth until we reached the seventh grade. And then we had a high school style program of seventh grade. We changed rooms for various subjects during the day.
Your parents lived across from the reformatory.
Well, not quite.
Not quite?
Not quite across. We lived near it, you know. But not quite across from it, because Tom Lovell divided us.
Yeah. Your house was on really on three roads. It was
Harvard
Road on one side. Pittsburgh Road.
At that time.
Yeah, Route 2A now. And what did you have out in front of the house?
Well, we had gas tanks. That was, say, too, where I was married. Would that be all right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I came here in 1918 in November, I think it was. And we bought Mr. You'll have to help me with this.
Hunter's house.
So we bought a house that Mr. Hunter owned. And
he was, I interject, he was Charlie Camo's future father-in-law.
And we were married down at Mrs. Mrs. Hosmer's. Julia Hosmer's. We were married down there because it was the year of the flu, you know, and a lot of people were sick. And our minister, I came from Rosemary, and our minister was sick, and I couldn't have him. So we were married at Mrs. Julia Hosmer's house, and Dr. McDonald married us, Unitarian minister. And we had the reception at Mrs. Hosmer's house, and Mrs. Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt.
Stood up for me.
That's the hardware?
She was a great grandmother. Her grandmother was a
grandmother of the Parkins,
yeah. Yeah. Mrs. Vanderbilt.
That's all right, though.
You can fix it, though, don't you?
It's fine.
So, as I say, we had the little reception there. And then we came up to the house we owned up here in Wisconsin that we had just bought. I made my own wedding bed. And we went up into the shopping for Sunday. So that was it. And my husband, well, he had a store down that was owned by Mr. Fowler. And we had a music shop, and we had some furniture. And the mattresses that we had, was filled with Excelsior in those days. There was no cotton or no springs in those days in the mattresses. So from there on, I was just a housewife.
But you helped him run the gas station?
Oh, yes, I did. Yes, I pumped gas, that's right.
The car
is
going
to garage. It is, that's right. And, you know, sometimes I'd be washing windows on the outside of the house, and the prisoners would be going by in the car to go up to the farm. And if I dropped my wiper, you know, they'd get up and pick it up and bring it up and throw it up to me. And they were very good to me, the prisoners. If I had anything on the line and it blew it off, they would go get it from me.
So you didn't live in fear?
No, they wouldn't have done anything to me, no. Because I liked my husband very much. And he used to roll up his old neckties and put them in his pocket and take them up to him. And they used to have a lot of speakers come then over the prison. And a lot of the people all around the church were here. And I would take all my visitors. I used to have a lot of company in those days. And I would take them over to the other side of us on Sunday morning. And I remember when it was Easter time, and my husband had a singer come out from Boston for the service. And I remember just watching his sound. I know it was my being a little bit. And it was beautiful. And he really had a wonderful choir. And a lot of instruments, you know, to play with.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. You lived near the garage.
Right.
Oh, yes, right near the garage.
The house was recently demolished.
Oh, yeah.
It's not too long ago. It was vacant for quite a while. Yeah. The Goodriches bought the garage first, or they operated it for you first, and then they bought the whole property in 1922, when my mother and father moved to Harding Street when I was born.
Is that where it was located? Is that behind where the Getty Station is now?
Yes.
Only there was a house there, mm-hmm. and it was a lovely house. But after Mr.
Goodrich.
Yes, after they gave it up, the wind was going up and, you know, that was true.
I think the state owned it for a while before they demolished it. Mm-hmm. It's part of the plan of renovating Route 2.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, there's nothing much more about me.
Well,
no, your father's position as an, it was a formal position as an organist.
That's
for the reformatory.
It was a civil service position. He had a music store in Maine at the same time, concurrently, where he sold pianos and music and records and player roles for player pianos, and he also tuned pianos. And he was also an accompanist, too. Music was his profession. And to supplement his income, he played the organ in various churches all around. I think he'd been in every church in Maine at one time or another. And he been the organist at the Calvary Methodist Church in Roslindale.
They probably would be the
rest. And as I say, he heard about his position opening at the reformatory. And at, we had to take an exam for it at St. Cecilia's Church in Boston under mm-hmm. Professor O'Shea.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the document in our archives that is passing the civil service exam. And the duties included training a choir, which he did on Thursdays. And it always interrupted his Rotary Club meeting. He'd have to leave early to get to the prison. And in the extra programs that probably were not required, but he just did them for their edification and enjoyment.
Yeah, it seemed to have had a very good relationship.
Always, yes. Do you remember one time he told you about meeting somebody on the street in Boston? And the man recognized my father, and my father didn't recognize him, so he said, "Don't you remember, I was up at the big house in Concord."
Now, there were prison chaplains at that time.
Yes. Who were they?
Well, Reverend Bath and Reverend Walker. And Reverend Walker,
Stone.
Oh, and Mr. Stone.
Yes.
They had a strong influence on the prisoners.
They did. They published, the prisoners published a paper called Our Paper. And we have a bound volume of it from the early time when my father was there. And there were many interesting activities that both those men put on for the prisoners. They kept them abreast of times, didn't they?
Could you describe the development of Carty's furniture?
Let's see now. First, when I met him, he had a store, a music store in Roslindale.
That's right.
And then we were married, he came up to this country to me, and he had a music store in Maine at that time. And as Bob said, he was determined to and, what else? Oh, and then Mr. Fowler, this is awful. Mr. Fowler had a store in Wisconsin, where the shoe store is now.
The Hayes shoe store.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he sold out that store to Mr. Carter. And from there, we had a furniture store with the music for a while. And then we had the store built over where it is now, the first beginning of it. And what else we do?
Well, that piece of land belonged to Mr. and Mrs. Benjamin Shepherd.
Okay.
And where the store stands was their tennis court. because the whole land in that area was part of the Derby Farm originally. And it, rather peculiarly, that was the only piece of land available in West Concord that we could buy.
My father could buy it.
So he built the front section, which is about a 30 by 60 building, a basement and two stories. And what did we do after that? We built an addition in the back for a warehouse on the first floor and display space on the second, connecting the two buildings with a passway between on the ground level. And after the war, you and I locked up that passageway.
He had died.
Yes, he died in 1935. Mm-hmm. And then we added on a storeroom to the right, going mm-hmm. as far westerly as we could on the piece of land. And then the Coleman property became available. Mr. Coleman operated a steel and machine business. He built gravel and coal loaders, right? Mm-hmm. And he also had been previously to that a publisher. He published a newspaper which was called the Middlesex Something, a copy of which is in the Concord Public Library.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually became ill and passed on, and the business was operated by a nephew of his wife's for a while, and they finally decided to move it out of Concord to another location, and we were able to buy these two wooden buildings, one of which still exists, and that was a blacksmith shop at one time, and it belonged to Mr. Tanner. And next to it, and the one that we tore down, had been a hat shop, according to the historical notes that we gathered. And that one we demolished and made our addition back in 1962. Anything else you'd like to add about the store? You ran it exclusively during the war years, when I was off in the Navy and all the young men in the area were off at war, and you depended on French and help, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. And the ones I helped the most was the Dave Caldwell. He helped me at Mr. Tuck's. They were very kind to me, and they helped me.
Now, you're a member of the West Concord Village Improvement Association. That had existed for quite a while.
Yes. Oh, way back before I was born, I guess it was in existence.
Right.
And during my childhood, its main events were the night before the 4th celebration and fire on the school property. And the fireworks and...
A representative would come and speak to us. I don't remember the thing.
Edith Nurse Rogers, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right.
And then there would be minstrel shows.
No, that's not right. I don't, yes.
And at the playground there would be homecoming day, that sort of thing. Floats and activities for the children, games, athletic events, that sort of thing.
And now it has a historic arm to it.
That's right. It became evident through the membership. People had a lot of information, and we decided that West Concord had a story to tell, and that we ought to let people know about it. So, with the help of Elizabeth Bickett, Mrs. Marion Wheeler, Mrs. Winslow Damon, Joyce Woodhall, and Benjamin, John Benjamin, we put together a historical tour 2 years ago, and it was well received, well attended, So we repeated it again last spring. And again, it was well attended. And it has continued to function with kind of an unstructured organization. We hope that the information that we obtain will be preserved somewhere.
Could you tell me some of the women's groups that you belong to? And could you tell us what that stood for?
Well, that was to help people not to drink.
Mm-hmm. That was the Women's Christian Temperance Union?
Mm-hmm, that's mm-hmm. right. And I belong to the Women's Club, too.
The West Concord.
The West Concord. I didn't belong to too many things because I didn't have time.
Mm-hmm.
And I belong to the West Concord Union Church.
Mm-hmm.
I sat in the same pew for 50 years.
In my youth, I remember a fountain that was located at the Percy Rideout Playground that was donated by the Women's Christian Temperance Union, WCTU, to encourage people to drink water rather than liquor. Did you tell them about Mrs. Lane, Mary B. Lane? She was one of the founders of this WCTU, and I can recall she would come to Union Church Sunday school classes prior to an election when on the ballot there'd be the question of whether or not Concord would be wet or dry. And say if it was question number two on the ballot, she would, she was a very elderly woman with a little piece of black velvet around her hair. And she would impress on us to tell our parents to vote no on question number two. She was known as the Duchess, and she owned the house to the right of the Union Church. And somehow, either through gift or through purchase, it became the parsonage of the church. And she moved to a piece of property directly behind it. It was a double house, and lived there for many years with her husband, Henry.
Oh, thank you.